Hari O Sahana Abatu Sahana Bunaku Sahariyan Karababahai Tejasvinabhitamastama Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Brahma insists that his relationship is mostly based on formality, as if Brahma were a governor dealing with a senior statesman. Brahma insists that he manages but one universe amongst countless billions, that the Lord interacts with him in the same way he acts with all the rest. In other words, Brahma opines that the Lord accepts his offerings in order to honor the universal principle of sacrifice, not because he's particularly interested in Brahma. But Brahma is quick to point out that however, that the distance in the relationship is not the fault of the Lord's, but due to his own offensive nature, right? Because it's important in this system where the Lord is, where the devotee is pointing out his own weaknesses in the devotional process after they've been pointed out as something glorious by another devotee, is that one should do so without saying anything against scriptures, that it throws that someone else is at fault. Right? That's important. Otherwise, it's much easier to do it in that way, make yourself the victim. It makes everything very easy, But in here, then it's a matter of etiquette and just the way the devotee is perceiving it, right? Because the one is saying it's the Lord showing his mercy, and then the devotee is just looking at it, as we said, as just by the situation. That the Lord, he does this for every Brahma, because Brahma is managing the universe, and Brahma is doing all these sacrifices out of respect for sacrifice, and out of the position of Brahma, then he's interacting like this. It sets proper example, it does all these different things, so it's not specifically that I've gained the mercy. It's just part of the whole, the job description.
So yes. He's not disagreeing with Narada Muni, he's just saying there's more to it.
That's it. It's your, yeah. Means he's disagreeing that it's a symptom of mercy. He's just shifting it from being the results of his activities to the situation of how you could look at it based on whatever they've said. Does that make sense? In other words, you take what it is that the person has said, and then from that, then you refute it based on that point, right?
Yeah.
But you're shifting it to a different area,
yeah.
Right? So you're perceiving it from a different perspective that the devotee is.
Yes.
So then you take the same facts that they point out and then make it into...
Is this the same thing that Lord Chaitanya had fun with before he manifested himself as a devotee, his nyaya pastime? Is this the same?
No, it's not. This is not chala where they're just having some fun. Mm. This is not like two brahmacharis. Oh, you're so great. No, I'm the lowest of the low. No, you are. No, I am. like this. We're not talking about that stuff, because you know, what's the basis of saying, and then the other one is not using, you know, a Shastric basis. But the principle of glorifying devotees and being humble is in place. But just technically how it's done. So it's also, we may not be used to hearing it done in the proper way.
That's fair.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But that principle of being humble, or the principle of respecting devotees, that's there. Yes.
The old faithful principle, if you glorify somebody and somebody glorifies you, you're always there for somebody else.
No, that you don't have to do. Because Narad Muni is you know, finding, oh, you are the greatest devotee, because so that's the reason that you're directing to someone else. You just say, oh, you know, you really got the Lord's mercy and this and that. And is that what it says? Yeah. So it's, but if they say, you're the greatest devotee, then you can say, no, that one's great. Like that. She has better sorrows.
More often.
Yes, and more often. So definitely more mercy of the Lord. So now Brahma is saying, 65, just consider this, my dear professor of logic, Vicharacharya. Right?
Yes.
He loves only devotion. He shows his mercy only to his devotees, never to non-devotees. Just as Sri Narada used logic to show how much mercy Brahma enjoys, Brahma will use superior logic to refute these claims. Brahma argues that the Lord bestows mercy only on devotees. Brahma advances that he is a non-devotee and thereby receives no mercy. Brahma's first premise is accurate. The Lord himself tells Uddhava how much he loves devotion. Only by practicing unalloyed devotion with full faith in me can one obtain me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am naturally dear to my devotees who take me as the only goal of their loving service. By engaging in such pure devotional service, even the dog eaters can purify themselves from their contamination of their low birth. You don't have a
Haribol.
Yeah, Haribol. Neither religious activities endowed with honesty and mercy, nor knowledge obtained with great penance can completely purify one's consciousness if they are bereft of loving service to me. So these other techniques, Haribol. Okay, so that was the one with the hat. So someone came with a floppy hat and I couldn't see who it was. Now I know who it was, yes. Okay, so these religious karma gyan, you can't get purified fully unless there's bhakti. So it's actually bhakti is the dynamic principle. These others are something in which that can carry it. You know, it's just like you can never become purified by a cup, right? But if that cup is carrying medicine, then you will be. So does the credit go to the cup or to the medicine? So the karma and gyan are only mediums for carrying bhakti.
Yes.
So the credit doesn't actually go to the karma or the gyan. That's the.
Can you say that by karma and gyan we can figure out what we don't want, but not what we want, or is that?
And even you can't even really figure out what you. No, that's good. It's just for the general. Thank you. Otherwise, it gets bit much. When it's colder, then you can do that. What are you saying? No, because if there's no bhakti, how will karma even give an idea of what is actually real? You might decide that, you know, you'd rather go to this planetary system than that one. You know? But, or jnana, you may understand, okay, we're not the body, we're the soul. But that's as far as you can get. So it's not actually a real understanding of spirituality. It's somewhat of an understanding, but it's not a real understanding.
The term materially exhausted.
Materially exhausted.
Can we get to that point by engaging in karma and jnana, and at some point we've tried it all and we're materially exhausted? And in that sense, you know, you start looking for something different.
Yes, but it's a temporary situation, because the soul is active by nature, and the nature is to be happy. So therefore, then the soul will at some point figure out that, you know, you could get some benefit. Does that make sense? Right? So you'll find something else. So that's why there's a window. That's what, in seventh canto, then Narada Muni is explaining to Yudhishthira Maharaj about the Varnashram system. Having explained that, then he explains the Dharma of women, because it will be within that, but then there's their own duties. And then, having explained that, now you've covered everyone in the Varnashram. Now it covers the Mlechas and Yavans, which are neither, which don't fall into the other categories. Right? And so there it's, he gives the example of like when you're pouring ghee on a fire. If you pour too much, it goes out. Right? If you pour some, it gets bigger. But if you pour too much, it goes out. Right? But it's only when that window is there. You can't say later it'll be there, because that's not a jnata sukriti as such. You know, it's not like pious activity that remains. This is just you did too much. You know, it's like how you say Monday morning after the Sunday feast. I don't know if anybody can relate to this, but
you say morning. I say like late morning. Or
okay.
Noon, when you finally get up.
Yes, whenever it is that you arise on Monday morning, then you figure I should not eat that much, and you're quite determined. You know, until the end of the week when your determination is weakening, and then by Sunday you do it exactly again. Yeah. Does that make sense? That's why there's a window.
Yes.
So it's not a recommended process, because you don't know if it will actually work or when it will work and for how long. So materially exhausted, then you have those who by an unscientific process become materially exhausted.
Yes.
Right? Then you have those that through these processes of karma and jnana mixed with bhakti, then they come to the point of being materially exhausted, because they see there is nothing to gain.
Yes.
That is
stable.
That's stable.
That's the base of knowledge.
Yes. But don't count on anything. You're in the material world, right? You know, so it's never good to count on I can do it later. You know, the standard Hindu thing is,
yeah,
when we get old, then we'll take up these things. But you don't know. You'll be too attached. You might die, you know, at 50, you know, like that. Yeah, who knows what's going to happen? You can't say.
And even if you acknowledge it's better, why wait? What's the point?
Yeah. That would be, you know, you could give the example to the gentleman. Says, yes, just like if you had a whole bunch of small business opportunities, that would give some little profit like that, you know, okay, but little profit. And you had one business venture that is fabulous and would give the greatest profit, so definitely you save that till later, right? You know, when I get old and all that, and I've done all these other little ones, then I can get around to the big one and sit back and... No, they take the big one first. Yeah, so that's like what you say. That's the better approach. Yes?
There was a Christian theologian, and later in his life he admitted that when he was young, he used to pray to the Lord, "Oh Lord, please give me celibacy, but not just yet."
Yes. 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 premise, first premise is accurate. Okay, we would just read that. Okay, that's what we just did. Krishna also similarly states in Bhagavad Gita, "My dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I understand, can I be understood as I am standing before you, and can thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding." Bhagavad Gita 11:54. So it's only through devotional service. So Brahma's premise, he's saying, is only through devotional service do you get. You're saying I have, but it's only through devotional service you get the mercy. So you have to agree to that. It's correct. Right? So that's the first thing. It means if you, in the logical system, first say something that the person has to agree with. Right? Because then it always makes it harder as you go through these all these things they have to agree with. Then when they finally put it together, it's kind of like there's all this that makes sense. How can I say no now? But if you open with something they don't like, then you know it doesn't get any better, the discussion.
So that's why Prabhupada mentions that we should at least theoretically accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yes.
So then at some point we will actually accept him.
Yes, because if you're working on that premise, then you... Yeah. Because it's not an uncommon thing that they do, even in the Western circles, is that, you know, okay, pretend that this is the situation, and then imagine yourself in this situation, or these kind of things, and then people can try. And then once they've got that, then they explain based on that. So it's the same kind of thing. Next, Brahma attempts to prove his next premise, that he has no devotion. Right? Because he said, only by devotion you get this. Yeah. Forget it, 66, forget about my having any devotion for him. I would be happy if only it were true that I never offended him. Right? I cannot expect him to tolerate my offenses as he does Lord Shiva's. With benedictions obtained from me, the wicked Hiranyakashipu became the tormentor of all the worlds dedicated to violence against the Vaishnavas.
Why do you speak here? I can't expect him to tolerate my offenses as he does
or she. I'm not sure. I'm sure it will be explained. Yes? In the Shiva chapter. So something to look forward to. Yes. With benedictions obtained. Okay. After the Lord and his form as Nrsingadev destroyed Hiranyakashipu, I and my entourage stood fearful at a distance, trying to please the Lord with skillful prayers, but he would not even honor us with a sidelong glance. Yet, when Prahlad was inaugurated king, the Lord at once became pacified. Then I slowly approached him, and he angrily ordered me, "You should not give such benedictions to demons, O lotus-born." 71. Nonetheless, I kept on giving benedictions to wicked demons like Ravana, whose tongue can even mention the sins Ravana has done. In text 67 through 78, Brahma elaborates on the offenses against the Lord for which he considers himself responsible. Having mentioned the killing of Hiranyakashipu, Brahma goes on to tell of Lord Nrsingadev's dissatisfaction at Brahma's mistakes. The promise of invincibility Brahma gave Hiranyakashipu resulted in offenses to the Lord's pure devotee. The Lord takes such offenses more seriously than offenses directly against himself. The Lord tells Brahma in Srimad Bhagavatam, "My dear Lord Brahma, O great Lord born from lotus, just as it is dangerous to feed milk to a snake, so it is dangerous to give benedictions to demons, who are by nature ferocious and jealous. I warn you not to give such benedictions to any demon again." Srimad Bhagavatam 7:10-30. Lord Nrsinga was not going to excuse Brahma for his bad judgment just because Brahma had been born from the Lord's own navel. The Lord's judgment was later confirmed when Brahma gave Ravana supernatural power. Misusing that power, Ravana disturbed the world, offended Lord Ramachandra by kidnapping Mother Sita, and committed other odious crimes. 72. Yes.
And why Brahma gave those benedictions? I mean, once he committed a mistake, but then again, because he's obliged.
They're praying, they're doing everything properly, because you don't technically know what they'll do. But that's the Lord's point, is because you don't know what they'll do with it, better you don't give them. Right? Because otherwise he's considering they're doing austerity and that, they don't get the results to their endeavor, then they'll give up that faith in the Vedic system. Right? Then there'll be also trouble. You know, so he's probably thinking along these lines about how both of these are, you know. But at the same time, as the demons always create so much difficulty. Remember, 72. Remember the offenses committed against the Lord by Indra and other demigods I appointed. The excessive pride of those demigods constantly perverts their discrimination. Indra sent rain to retaliate for the Govardhan sacrifice, sometimes fought against the Lord and committed other offenses. The Lord of the Waters, Varuna, offended the Lord by kidnapping Nanda Maharaj, by failing to return the cows belonging to Bana, and so on. Yamaraj made mistakes like allowing the wrongful death of the son of the Lord's teacher, and Kuvera was responsible for the wicked misdeeds of Shankachuda and others. In the lower planetary systems, live the Daityas, who always attack Lord Vishnu's devotees. And also living there are the serpent friends of Kaliya, who are by nature contaminated by anger. Indra had mentioned to Narada that Brahma appoints the rulers of the planets. Brahma now turns this praise around, showing the same fact is a reason for him to feel ashamed. These universal rulers have committed numerous offenses against Lord Vishnu. And Brahma considers the offenses of his subordinates his own. Narada is familiar with these incidents, but Brahma is asking you to remember them for a moment. Indra's offenses were mentioned in the previous part. Varuna arrested Krishna's father Nanda for bathing in the Jamuna at a forbidden time, during the last minutes of the night at the beginning of the Dwadasi. And Varuna ordered Nanda Maharaj bound and brought to his court. Varuna is also known to have failed to return some cows that belonged to Bana, and to have sometimes spoken duplicitously. Yama, the Lord of Death, took away the young son of Krishna's teacher, Sandipani Muni, allowing the demon Panchajanya to kill the Brahmin boy. Sri Vishnu Purana 5.21.30 and other scriptures furthermore describe Yamaraj as becoming an opponent of Krishna in battle. Kuvera's servant Shankachuda tried to kidnap Krishna's cowherd girlfriends, and as described in the Puranas, the two sons of Kuvera, cursed by Narada to become trees, were implicated in collaborating with King Kamsa. Besides the demigods Indra, Varuna, Yama, and Kuvera, who are the superintendents of the four principal directions, many minor demigods are also guilty of offenses against Krishna. And the subterranean serpents come in for blame simply because they are blood relatives of Kaliya. Because they have the same nature. They're just as like that. It's not that they're all great guys. And Kaliya was the black snake in the family. Right? You know, like that. Yes. Okay. And recently, by magic, I stole the calves and young friends of the Lord. Calves and young friends the Lord was watching after in Vrindavan. I took them all away while the boys were having lunch. I then saw most amazing wonders and became frightened, offering prayers and bowing down to the Lord. I thought, I am so arrogant. But now, in his pastime as a cowherd boy, he has tricked me. In Brahma's opinion, this last offense, his own, was worse than all the transgressions committed by other demigods. Krishna arranged for Brahma to see that he had continued playing with the boys and calves for a whole year, even after Brahma had supposedly kidnapped them. Brahma saw each of the boys and calves assume the spiritual form of the personality of Godhead, each holding within himself all the universes. Suddenly realizing the seriousness of his offense, Brahma became afraid. He thought himself arrogant because he had now dared approach with prayers and obeisances the Lord he had repeatedly offended. Brahma focused his mind on Lord Krishna standing before him as a small cowherd boy holding a handful of chipped rice and yogurt from someone else's plate. And Brahma was astonished. The Lord had defeated him, and now the Lord was not even responding to his prayers. In the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada describes Brahma's apology and prayerful sentiment as follows. Your appearance as a cowherd child is for the benefit of the devotees, and although I have committed an offense at your lotus feet by stealing away your boys and calves, I can understand that you have bestowed your mercy upon me. That is your transcendental quality. You are very affectionate towards your devotees. But in spite of your great affection for me, I cannot estimate the potency of your bodily activities. It is to be understood that when I, Lord Brahma, the Supreme Personality of this universe, cannot estimate the childlike body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then what to speak of others? And if I cannot estimate the spiritual potency of your childlike body, then what can I understand about your transcendental pastimes? Therefore, as it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, anyone who can understand a little of the transcendental pastimes, appearance and disappearance of the Lord, immediately becomes eligible to enter the kingdom of God after quitting the material body. This statement is confirmed in the Vedas, where it is stated, simply by understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can overcome the chain of repeated birth and death. I therefore recommend that people should not try to understand you by their speculative knowledge. Krishna Book Chapter 14. So it's through the devotion you can understand, because he is ununderstandable. Brahma, with his great intelligence, can't even understand the qualities of the body of the Lord. Because that's the first thing. You have the name, form. Then there's qualities, then there's pastime. So he says, I can't even understand the position of the body. How am I going to understand anything else? So it's only through devotion that can be there. So you offer devotion, then Krishna is pleased. Here again, Brahma condemns the process of jnana as being an impediment to knowing the absolute truth.
Lord Brahma's devotion is mixed with passion, usually, if he's a devotee.
No, he's in charge of the motive passion, so what's said is sometimes he falls under its influence, because he's dealing with it all the time. So sometimes you may forget you're dealing with it and then become affected.
So he is a pure devotee according to the definition we gave
him? Yes, but the point is he's a devotee, so see, when the devotee points out his own faults, we don't really take those seriously. We use those in our own life to see that, you know, okay, we do like that. You know? It's not like, you're such a great devotee. No, I'm a rat bag. Oh, okay. Yeah, he's a rat bag. You know, so, and the Shastra says don't associate with rat bags. So, okay. Nice knowing you. How do you go? Is that okay? Yes.
This pastime of Lord Brahma, was that within Krishna's plan that he wanted this to happen so that his devotees and the God could be with him one year, like exchanging in that way?
But. I'm sorry. The acharyas point that out, but what is the direction you want to take this line of questioning?
The direction is that was he under Mahamaya or was he under Brahmamaya?
I don't know. Here is pointed out there was, see, is Krishna only acts under within the sphere of yoga maya, no? But he's killing the demon. But he's doing so through his internal potency. But the demon, what potency are they under? What potency is the demon under? Yes, so both can be functioning at once. You know what I'm saying? So the whole element is that these things that is said, we can apply this in our life. Okay, we maybe don't have demigods that we're appointing 14 times a day, you know, but, you know, we have family, friends, you know, our occupations, our areas of influence, you know, we're giving responsibility. And so the whole point is do we take responsibility when they do something wrong? Does that make sense? You know, that's the principle is there. So now he's saying because they do something wrong, that means I've done something wrong. So how can you say I'm always doing everything great? You know what I'm saying? So in other words, these are how we look at things, how to apply this not wanting respect for ourselves in our own lives. So these principles are there. Is that...
I was wondering your opinion. I've seen some cases where people will make some admission of humility and it gets taken the wrong way by non-devotees and it weakens people's faith. Like, for example, someone might say, after so many years of chanting, still my heart is so hard, or I have no taste. And other people might say, well, that process sounds kind of useless.
But why would you say that to the non-devotees? What do they know? You know what I'm saying? You wouldn't say that to them.
Yeah.
You know, you can say is yes, I've been chanting for so long, my heart is just, you know, still as hard as you know, a rock, but your heart, you haven't done anything for Krishna, so you know, you don't even count. You're just downright disgusting. You know, so it's like, you know, at least that I've understood and I'm making the attempt, I'm associated with devotees, so I have a chance, but you got no chance at all. You know,
like,
you know what I'm saying? If you're going to use that, then it's about putting things in perspective here. Yeah, so therefore, since you wouldn't use that, you wouldn't use the other one. It means you have to know how to use humility. It says, you know, so is the process working? Yes, by the grace of my spiritual master. It's not because I'm such a great chanter. It's by the blessed means I make the attempt, and the Lord and the devotees are very kind. Therefore, the results are there by their mercy. Not that I necessarily deserve that, because, you know, you want to do things perfect, and I don't necessarily always do it perfect because it's a process of practice. And so that, you know what I'm saying, is that you can say, but you have to know what to say to who. Right? Because you, in other words, surrender is there for those who can accept the surrender. If you surrender to those who are going to take advantage of it, why would you surrender? You know what I'm saying? Like, you surrender to Yudhishthira because he'll honor that. You don't, you know, surrender to some other person, because then as soon as you put your weapon down, then that's when they kill you. Is that basic?
Yeah.
So you have to be, you have to know who to be humble to. Because the point is, if you're representing the Lord, then it has to come out good for the Lord. Yes.
I got in contact with someone I haven't spoken with in 20 years, and I didn't really think, you know, he's a non-devotee, so I started glorifying him and talking stuff that I would usually just talk to a devotee about, you know, so like this humble. It was a very short conversation, and we didn't speak much after because he just freaked out. He couldn't deal with it. It was just not a way he was used to communicating. I just didn't think of him, but afterwards it kind of seemed very humorous. I'm trying to imagine what he might have been thinking when I sprung this on him.
I mean, you met him, or you were talking on the
email.
Oh, so now you can send next time. So now we tried to pray. So now, how about we talk about all your, you know, your bad stuff, and then see, you know, you know, say, would that be better?
I can try.
You know, you don't necessarily get into it, but you just kind of allude to it.
Yeah.
So you have to find what works, so that they actually respect the process.
Yeah.
And appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there, then it falls on the. That's what we opened with, is that Brahma was very careful that it didn't fall on the. That it's the Lord's fault. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's not the process or anything else like that. It's just you as an individual. I may not be so qualified. You say, but then so the process is not so good. It says, no, I'm not so good. So many others are following the process. They're getting fabulous results. Mm-hmm. You know? You know, some way you have to. Okay. Here again, Brahma condemns the process of jnana as being an impediment to knowing the absolute truth, right? He knows so much, so he thinks he's not following the rules, so he's making the point is he's standing there, you know, with this prasad in his left hand. You know, that's how he made the mistake in the first place. And so at the end, after showing all that, he's again standing there. Okay, got it?
Yeah.
Okay, sada. Sada. The Acharyas further reveal the gap between Lord Brahma's scholarly demeanor and the Lord's playful lila. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, since Lord Krishna was playing exactly like an innocent young cowherd boy in Vrindavan, after the four-headed Brahma offered his prayers, the Lord maintained his role as a young cowherd boy and thus remained silent before Brahma. Krishna's silence indicates the following thoughts. Where did this four-headed Brahma come from? What is he doing? What are these words he keeps on speaking? I am busy looking for my calves. I am just a coward boy and do not understand all this. Lord Brahma had considered Lord Krishna an ordinary coward boy and had treated him as such. After accepting Brahma's prayers, Krishna continued to play as a coward boy and thus did not answer the four-headed Brahma. Rather, Krishna was more interested in rejoining his coward boyfriends for the picnic lunch on the bank of the Jamuna, right? Because they've been separated for a year now, right? You know? So now he wants to meet them. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:14-42-78. Simply by the spontaneous glance of favor upon me from his lotus face, I became joyful. I realized how fortunate I was to have visited the land of Braja, which is so dear to him. Narada might wonder how everything seemed all right with Brahma so soon after Brahma's blunder and embarrassment. How was he now sitting happily in his own abode? One answer Brahma gives here is that he at once felt the purpose of his life fulfilled just by seeing the Lord's ever-smiling face. And he had also received the rare opportunity to stay a short time in Sri Brajadam. Braja is the most sacred land, and Krishna is the only shelter of its residents. Thus, Brahma felt that after having mistreated the calves and coward boys of Braja, it was best for him to leave quickly and go back to Brahma Loka. 79. Fearing I would commit more offenses if I stayed there too long, I then went away. What else need I tell you about my ill fortune? Brajabhumi is the place of the Supreme Lord's intimate dealings with his dearmost devotees. Materialistic persons should not stay there longer than a few days, long enough to gain transcendental benefit from contact with the holy Dham, but not long enough to become offensive towards the Dham and its residents. Brahma, thinking himself one of the ordinary conditioned souls, had returned quickly to his own place. Now he had nothing more to say about his own shortcomings, since he felt that he had adequately refuted each point of Narada's praise. Lord Brahma directs Narada to Lord Shiva. Yes.
They will say that Brahma's offense here was due to his difference in mood, so that we can also...
Difference in mood.
Yes, because there was such a gap. He is seeing the Supreme Lord and what Krishna was displaying in Braj, because there was so much intimacy and he saw much majesty.
And the idea being?
So, this is the source of his offense. That's why it happened, because it's such a difference.
And then where will you take this after, if we said yes?
Just thinking about myself, sometimes we might offend devotees. There is so much difference between them and us.
Okay, so now, then it's the problem of the difference, not yourself. So actually, you didn't really do anything wrong, because it's only the difference that made...
I might be there.
You know, it's like this. If you were driving down the road in a very large, let's say, marshmallow, and you bumped into somebody, then, you know, nothing much would happen. But since it happens to be, you know, the car is so hard and all that, then you're bumping into them. It's actually the car's fault because it's so solid. How to escape? Then you just have to be more aware of this, more sensitive of the situation. The point is if you're trying to avoid offenses, then don't do anything that could be taken that way. You know, but does that make sense? You have the standard etiquette. You follow that standard etiquette. That's why it's recommended. You know, even though, of course, we love to take pot shots at it, that it's, you know, old and archaic, and the modern system is so much superior. Don't you just see how everybody in the world loves each other and all that? Yeah. So, like that. No? Yeah. So, therefore, it's a matter of the etiquettes are there, you know them. So Brahman knew the etiquettes, but it was Gyan. He wasn't applying those etiquettes to the Lord. Because then he just thought, you know, that this can't be the Lord because he's not following all these technical rules. Is that... Yes.
Since Lord Krishna's form is unique, it's not a creation of Brahma, how did Brahma became bewildered by his form, like he was a material form? I mean, Kamala, the boy.
No, but he's... But the point is Krishna's acting in human pastimes. So he does things that the boys do. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's that this is how Krishna likes to act. That position then is given to the human beings here, right? Because in the spiritual world, you don't have to worry about it. Because in Vaikuntha, they're not interested in that. Dwarka, they're not interested in that. Braj, they're interested. So, then acting in this way, then, you know, everything's perfect there. But within the material world, then that human nature then is the position from which you can most easily enter his pastimes. Right? So that's because that's the position that he appreciates the most. Right?
I was saying, because Brahma is the controller and the creator of everything. He knows all the living entities. So Lord Krishna falls in the category of part of this man, part of this creation.
Because he said Gyan's not enough. It's only through bhakti that you understand. Gyan is not enough to understand. Yes, because just because you have knowledge, that's not enough actually to make the whole system work. Is that so? Lord Brahma directs Narada to Lord Shiva. Lord Brahma suggests to Narad Muni that if he's looking for real devotion, he had better look beyond the material world. Like, because now he's looked at, you know, you know, the human position, the brahmana, right? Then he's looked at the king, he's looked at the demigods, and then the supreme of the demigods, Brahma. So now Brahma's saying, if you really want to see devotion, you have to go beyond the material creation. Right? Right. Even the most elevated inhabitants of the material cosmos, Brahma assures them, are fallen jivas nonetheless. Otherwise, why is one here? In this connection, Srila Prabhupada states, seeking shelter of a demigod instead of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead is compared to trying to cross the ocean by grasping the tail of a dog. A dog can swim, but that does not mean that one can cross the ocean by grasping a dog's tail. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.9, chapter overview. Right, so he's saying everybody here, no matter how great they are, they're conditioned. That's why they're here. 80. In fact, in this universe, I see no object of Lord Vishnu's mercy equal to Mahadev Shiva. He is famous as the dear friend of the Lord. Other than Lord Shiva, everyone in every part of the universe, upper, middle, and lower, is imperfect. Although certain persons like Prahlad will be described later in this book as greater devotees of Krishna than Lord Shiva, strictly speaking, they are not residents of the material world, because the character of a devotee like Prahlad is untouched by material contamination. Anywhere he resides is spiritual. Thus, Lord Brahma is not speaking inconsistently. Because Brahma and Shiva are both guna avatars, the Supreme Lord deals with them similarly. Brahma can understand Lord Krishna's mercy on Lord Shiva because it resembles something within his own experience. But the exceptional mercy obtained by a person much greater than himself is beyond Brahma's ability to understand. Only things in some way similar can be meaningfully compared as greater and lesser. For example, the weight of a blade of grass is so extremely different from that of a mountain that one cannot sensibly compare them. Thus, when goddess Ganga, as we are told in the Sri Harivamsa, declares the ocean more fortunate than herself, she does not compare herself with Brahma, who is much more fortunate still. In the same way, Brahma here compares himself with Lord Shiva, and not with even greater Vaishnavas like Prahlad, but to speak of the cowherd boys and other inhabitants of Braja.
And this is a principle that goes throughout the book. It takes someone who is...
Means, because the point is he's approaching and showing that here is this mercy. So naturally you're going to say, no, for that mercy you're talking about, I don't have that, this person has it. You know, so it's someone that you'll appreciate in that way.
So common ground.
Yes, but the idea is that you're going through these incremental steps so that you understand the position as it goes. Because otherwise, if we just go from the Brahma, the Brahmana, no, I'm not really the recipient of the Lord's mercy. Srimati Radhika in Braja Dham, she is the real recipient of the Lord's mercy. It's not quite work out. So what do we do in between? Right?
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, you know, so there has to be some steps. Right? Plus, it's a matter of, like you said, if they can relate to it, means it is greater than them. But their position was what was related to them from the person before them.
Yes.
Does that make sense? You know, it's like you're going to say, oh, you do such nice kirtan and all that. Oh, I'm not so good. This devotee is really good. You're not going to say, oh, I'm not so good. You know how you say hoo-hoo on Gandharva Loka. He's good. Right?
Yeah.
You know, so that's the whole thing. Is that there's a gradual development there. Oops.
And
81. Lord Shiva is always intoxicated by the taste found at Krishna's lotus feet. He therefore has no interest in any of the normal goals of life, even up to rulership of the universe and the sense enjoyment such rulership provides. As if ridiculing materialists like me, who are simply addicted to sense enjoyment, he goes around naked, wearing garlands of dushtura. I think it's datura. Yeah, well, I mean, unless that's a local name. Could be dushtura is the Sanskrit. Arka and bones and smeared all over with ashes, right? Because everybody else is dressing very nicely, everything very proper, all the, you know, following all the rules, like that. And so here is someone who, you know, he just does it. It's in as if ridiculing others, right? No, he's beyond the material world. He stays in Brahmaloka. No, we're talking about Shiva. Hey, Brahma Loke tu para antakale param rifat purita parimukhyanti sarve. That Brahma means the one beyond here.
Beyond the confines of the universe?
Yeah, that means the Brahman. That's also known as Brahma Loka. Because you have Brahma Loka, which means the residence of Lord Brahma. Then you have Brahmaloka, which means is that where's the Brahman, right? So in other words, he lives in the Brahman effulgence. He lives in
the,
yeah, he lives there. That's his. So that's also known as Brahmaloka. The same time as Vaikuntha is also known as Brahmaloka, because then you have the place of the Para Brahman. So that's why it's used in the Upanishads, because then everybody thinks that they get what they're looking for. You know, so for the Karmakandis, they can get to Brahmaloka, which means the highest planet within the universe, right? By karma or by yoga. You know, the Jnanis, then Brahmaloka, they get to, you know, that platform of transcendence. For the devotees, then it means Vaikuntha, you know, the spiritual world. So that's the uniqueness how the Vedic Sanskrit goes, is that it uses terms that can be used in, you know, for all the different methods, but they mean the devotional, but they do have these lower definitions, and so then depending upon your qualification, you'll understand them.
Like we're reading in Bhagavatamrita, he has one residence within Kubera, he has another residence within the layer of Ahankar within the universe, and then another beyond that in the Kailash.
Yes, no, he has all kinds of places.
Yeah.
You know, he even, you know, on Bhumandala, he has this place in the Himalayas.
Yeah.
Oh, do you remember there's a term that Rupa Goswami used when he says that when he expands his Balaram, then there's this nature, this quality of being the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of the material creation. He gave it a particular name. Yes, that I remember. Could be somewhere else, but that's the fun thing about the Shastras, is they're very elusive, right? Yeah. No, it was in the text. It was talking about this. In other words, the aspect of the Purusha avatar, that he's connected with material nature. That quality. You know, though he's not directly, he's dealing with the internal, but that transforms. So that element of that transformation of the material, was mentioning that as a particular nature that's there in Balaram, though you only see it manifest in the Purusha avatar. You don't remember that. I kind of remember it was something with an L, but, you know. Okay.
Okay.
His matted locks scattered about, he moves around aimlessly like a madman. Yet he is unable to conceal his glories. With joy, he carries on his head the Ganga, born from the water that washed Krishna's lotus feet. When he dances, he destroys the universe. Lord Shiva rejects with disdain the ambitions of religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. He has no desire to be independent controller and enjoyer. The satisfaction others derive from worldly pursuits and the achievement of supremacy does not attract him. He identifies himself fully as a servant of Krishna. In Lord Shiva's view, demigods like Brahma and Indra are addicted to sense enjoyment. The celestial garlands, ornaments, and perfumes last only a short time, so leave them dissatisfied. Right? That means long time, because it's like this, even if it lasts your whole lifetime, but when your garland fades, that means that's when you're checking out. So you're going to get dissatisfied when your garland fades, even though it lasted your whole lifetime. Yeah. Better than the decorations of the demigods are his own garlands, made of bones and intoxicating weeds, which at least cause no disappointment when they decay. Okay. Yeah, okay. These strange ornaments, Lord Shiva thinks, are no less substantial than Indra's and Brahma's divine garlands. But these are only Lord Shiva's external decorations. His real ornament and his real enjoyment are found in the mercy of Sri Krishna. Humbly thinking himself bereft of that mercy, he feels fit to wear weeds and bones. With such ideas in mind, the great Lord Shiva conducts himself in his own particular way. By Krishna's grace, Lord Shiva and his wife are able to award liberation to candidates like me who eagerly want it. Principal demigods like Indra and Brahma enjoy high posts in the administration of the universe. But after carrying out extensive duties for many millions of years, they may tire of this burden. Thus, liberation from material existence begins to look more and more attractive to them. In the midst of all the pomp and luxury of heavenly rulership, many demigods quietly harbor the desire for liberation. How do you say it? Quietly. They're closet liberationists. Does that mean Brahma's coming out now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Maharaj, could you please explain this 84 verse from another point of view?
This 84 verse.
Yes. Another point. It says, by Krishna's grace, Lord Shiva and his wife are able about liberation. About the liberation.
So what are you looking for?
I'm just asking you to explain this point.
Aren't we doing that now?
In Purport is saying about different part of the verse about Lord Brahma.
Means. And so what is it that is there a problem? You know what I'm saying? Do you not understand the verse?
Yes, I want to understand about the liberation part.
What is it you want to understand about the liberation part?
By Krishna's grace, Lord Shiva and his wife are able to about liberation.
So, but what's the question? What is it that you want to discuss?
I don't understand. So, is it Lord Shiva and his wife given liberation, or is Krishna's decision of it?
It says by Krishna's grace. So it means it's ultimately up to Krishna. It's just like material energy takes care of everything, but it's sanctioned by the Lord. So then Shiva deals with these things, and then it's by Krishna's sanction.
So Krishna's sanction, but they're responsible for the liberation of the souls, Shiva and Krishna.
You're moving your hand now. Why is that happening? Because Paramatma sanction that, and then Maya, through the modes of nature, make it happen. Does that make sense? You catch the connection. So do we put a big thing, so therefore is it all about Maya? Is she really the one? Or is it Krishna's the one who's sanctioning? Or why is my hand moving? Is that because Krishna's there? It says, okay, a little bit this way, a little bit that way. And or is it that Maya's doing the whole thing and she's... No, Krishna sanctions, Maya takes care. So if Krishna's sanctioning, then Shiva and his wife take care. So ultimately, where does the glory go? To the Lord. But at the same time, there is the respect and position that goes with that, the person who's carrying it out. Does that make sense? Yeah. Is that?
I heard in this connection that someone said that if you're a Shiva worshiper and you're doing it niskama, I mean with the right mood, then that worship would just actually be transferred back to Krishna and you would get this similar result as worshipping Krishna. You know?
A similar result? What does that mean by similar result?
Yeah.
What do they mean by similar? Because here we're only talking about liberation.
Yeah.
So as we mentioned, one name chanted in Nama Bas, you get liberation. So we're not talking something outstanding here. It means here in this realm we call it outstanding, but it's not actually that outstanding. Because right? You have something a little bit better, or something way better, but still it you lose satisfaction after a while. You know, it's like this. I'm sitting in my Fiat 500, driving down the road. I run over some glass. What happens? Okay. I'm riding around in my latest 12-cylinder Rolls Royce, and I run over some glass. And what happens? So that's the thing. It's that the result is the same. Just it's, you know, you have a fancier car to change the tire. So when the how you say, I don't you have it, the AA? Is that a British thing? America's the AAA. This has got to be American Automobile Association, right? Okay, when you call them and they show up, so then if you have the Fiat 500, they only charge you this much. You have a Rolls, they charge you more, though it's going to be the same to change the tire.
Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah, don't you regularly call them when you get a flat tire? Yeah, of course. You know, no, okay.
We got
you keep moving.
Trying to double the tires that we changed.
Yeah, yeah. We changed two tires. There was only one. I saw two. Huh? Yeah. So you had something? Or just... Oh, you had. Okay.
This kind of liberation that I see,
where do the souls go that Shiva gives liberation to? What are the options that you're thinking about? Brahma Jyoti. Okay. Where do the souls that Krishna gives liberation to go? No, when you use the term... It depends how you're using the term liberation. Here, liberation simply means getting out of the material world. Right? So for the devotee, liberation from the material world means that you're actually liberated. You go into the spiritual world. But for the demons, let's say, are killed by Krishna, they simply go to the Brahma Jyoti also. So the Brahma Jyoti is pretty much the standard place of liberation. Right? As a goal, as a destination, right? As a situation or a, position of consciousness, then it's not localized. Right? It's not that it's a specific area. It means wherever you are, if you are in transcendental consciousness, then you are beyond the material nature. Does that make sense? Okay. Or you want to type it into your GPS or something? No.
Turn right.
Okay. Yes.
I read so many times for this book that only Krishna can give liberation. And now all of a sudden, both Shiva and his wife.
But did you catch the beginning of the sentence?
Yeah, by the mercy of God.
So then that means it's just like this. Let's say I give you one of those, you know, zero Halliburton briefcases, you know, that's got 500,000 euros in it. Okay? You're cool with the briefcase? Okay. Okay? Yeah. Okay. Now it's up to you whether you want one of those little neat little bracelets or not, okay? Like that. Because sometimes then they cut off your hand if they want to take it. So they're not necessarily the best thing to have. Okay? So now, you have that. It's not your money, but somebody gives you that money to give to someone else, and then you give them the money. Okay, so we can say, by the grace of, you know, whoever it is that it engaged you, you gave $500,000 to this person. Did you give $500,000 to that person? Yes, but is it your $500,000? No. So therefore, the liberation is just by Krishna's grace, they're used as a medium. Because there's a lot of people that worship Shiva for this. But it's Shiva can't award it. It's only by Krishna's grace. So still, what does that mean? It comes down to only Krishna can give liberation. Nobody else is independent that they can give liberation without. Just like demigods and that can't give you material desire and facility without Krishna's permission. It's coming from that demigod, but only by the permission of Krishna. Is that? Yeah? So nothing's changed. Yes.
If someone worships Shiva, wouldn't it be natural for Shiva to preach bhakti to that person? To direct them towards Krishna.
But if they're not interested?
Yeah. I mean,
in other words, now all the people who all the ones.
Okay.
Here Lord Brahma groups himself with lesser demigods even though he is an empowered incarnation of the personality of Godhead. Speaking from humility, he describes himself as just another appointed minister with selfish motives of his own. So that's how he'll look at it. But we know that the glories that were said by Indra and by repeated by Narad by his realization are still correct. He's just saying is that that position, even though it may be, you know, whatever it is, they're still greater than that, right? But the devotee will always try to minimize. But the principle is that it still is there, but greater than that. So we're basically you could say is we're seeing a hierarchy in the manifestation of the mercy of the Lord, right? And at the same time as we're seeing, based on how one is approached, how the devotee then finds himself not qualified for such praise. Does that make sense?
Does that indicate a simultaneous hierarchy in the humility?
Not. I mean, humility in that the bigger they are, then that it has some significance. But the position is the same. Is that, you know, by using the shastra, they're showing how they're actually not that special, you know. Yes.
So you say, for example, that sometimes when the devotees are praised, the praise is adequate. So it is the sign of mercy, but they just don't feel to be deserving of that mercy, and they take it this way also because it happens to us sometimes. People say, you know, you are so
fortune, whatever. He can say, yes, I am fortunate because, you know, the Lord is kind in this way, but I'm undeserving.
You can use that. I mean, so you're just asking, is that also a technique to use?
No, I'm saying that is this also the point?
What's going on here? Not so much. They're just saying that I'm not actually qualified. So they're not looking at it. They're not looking at it so much from, yes, you're correct here. See, because it depends who you're dealing with. Right? Let's say you have somebody who's there and somebody comes up and praises them. But depending upon the position, then you might just listen and smile and that's it. You don't say anything about it, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's there. But at other times, then there may be what you've responded or others. But here, if you're dealing with Narad Muni, then it's just a matter of, no, I'm not actually qualified. But this person's qualified. Is that okay? So you have this. Yes?
I think it's a hierarchy. According to consciousness in relation to pure devotion.
That's the aspect is there, but at the same time is you're saying we're looking at the symptoms. Right? So now within the material world we've looked at having greater and greater facility and lesser material anxieties. Right? So we want to cover all those bases. One, it's only there by the Lord's mercy, whatever it is, from the human being. Because on one level, you can say the human beings are the lowest, right? Because even we go to the lower heavenly planets, you know, it's still part of Antariksha, so they're more powerful than humans, right? And then in the heavenly planets, they're more powerful, and now in Satyaloka, they're even more than that. So you've covered the earth, and then on earth, you know, who is considered, you know, the Brahmas and the Kshatriyas are considered like the Naradeva, right? The demigods amongst the humans, right? So we've covered that. Then we covered the demigods, right? Of all the demigods, 33 million, then Indra is the top, but then above him is Brahma. So now we've covered everything that you can cover within the universe. Now Brahma suggests that we go beyond the universe. Right? So there is. So you can't say one is there's a hierarchy, because otherwise, why is the Lord speaking to Brahma? Why is he living with Brahma? You know, why is he born from the navel? You know what I'm saying? Like that. So there's all these considerations are there. So he is very unique and special in that. But despite that, there's still a further glory to the mercy of the Lord. In other words, all these things are glories of the Lord. Right? It's like this. Let's approach this from a slightly different angle. Try this. Okay, we're trying to understand a hierarchy of glories of the devotee and the mercy of the Lord. Okay? Now, in doing this, Narad Muni sees some symptoms of devotion and mercy in the Brahman. Okay? So now Narad Muni goes up to him and goes, yes, you have the mercy of the Lord. Okay? So, what would be, you could say, your traditional Vaishnav dealings? Is that Brahman to go, yeah, of course. I mean, it's obvious, you know, if you read Shastra, you'd know that stuff. But I have this much, but Indra has more. Or the king has more. You know, and then he goes to the king, and the king says, yes, you know, it's just, only, you're so intelligent, you've seen all this, you know, how great, you know, like that. But even despite this greatness, there's more greatness in Indra. Like that. Would that be your standard kind of like Vaishnava response? Or the Vaishnavas say, no, 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 I'm not the one. It's this one. You understand? So you have the philosophical element and you have the cultural element. You know what I'm saying? But since we're not that accustomed to the cultural element, then as soon as anyone shows any sign of weakness, then that's the moment to, ha! See that? You know what I'm saying? So that's why it seems difficult. So all it is pointing out the humility. So it's the devotee is on that level, but there's somebody more. Okay? So that's the whole point. It says always somebody more. And then within that, then the etiquette is that the devotee doesn't see that he's great. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's just how a devotee naturally responds. You know, just like Krishna, it doesn't impress you offering prayers, you know, you're the greatest, you're the this, you're that. And what's Krishna doing? He's sitting there going, you know, where are my cows? Yeah, it's time for lunch here, you know.
Where's my rasa?
Yeah, you know, so that's the whole. So those things aren't that impressive to the Lord, so naturally it's not that impressive to the devotees. Right? Because if it's a fact, then it's just a fact. You know? You know, yes.
Also, do you think you could say one of the aims of Sanatana Goswami is to show how favorable the earth planet is to actually achieving the love of God? In some cases, it's more favorable than the heavenly planets.
Will he go back here? Because he'll do that in the second book. Does he do that in this book also?
No, in this one he doesn't go back. He goes to the lower planetary system.
Yeah, so I would say is that here is that it's just showing that degree of surrender, that degree of like that, and the Lord's reciprocation. So that reciprocation is there and all that. So that we have, so there's the indication that these external elements are going to be there. But at the same time, there's the essential point of that devotion, which is the real thing, which they have, but a devotee natural thinks he doesn't have. Like Brahma just counts himself amongst the demigods. Like that. You have to do 100 yajnas in one lifetime, then you become Indra. I guess you could do them over a few lifetimes if you remember. But in any case, 100 one lifetime, you could do 100 Ashwamedha yajnas. Because you can do technically one a year. Right? But then you have to perfectly follow Varnashram for 100 lifetimes to get to Brahma's position. So that's much greater, because Indra is the top of the demigods. But Brahma, you can see, is so far beyond that. So for him, that's his humility. He's counting self there, because, in other words, you're catching something common. You know? And then, based on that, then you're dealing. So here he's catching common is that, you know, they have a post, I have a post. They have facility, I have facility. You know, they get distracted, I get distracted. And so therefore, like this, we're all the same. You know, but Lord Shiva, he's not interested in any of this position, facility, this and that. In fact, he mocks us. You know, it's like, okay, he doesn't want to wear any of this stuff and he wants to go around naked, great. But he wears garlands of all these things that, you know, we would never do. It's just against the scriptures. You know, you don't make yourself a bone garland and wear that. You know, but he does. You know, so that's the thing. He's beyond. So is that? Indeed, everyone who lives on Shiva's planet is liberated. By his mercy, so many persons have become liberated souls and even pure devotees of Krishna. Shiva, Lord Shiva is Nitya Mukta, eternally liberated, and his devotees are liberated also. Many other fortunate souls living on lower planets like the earth have also been blessed by his mercy and instructions, which have given those souls the strength to advance spiritually in various ways. Because he's the head of one of the sampradayas, right? This Vishnu Swami line, I think that's the Shiva coming down from Lord Shiva. So from that aspect, you can say, Lord Shiva is the Vaishnava. Then he's given so many persons the blessings that they get Krishna's mercy in this way. So by his blessings, then getting Lord's mercy, you get liberated, or you come to devotion to Krishna. Okay. 86. To consider Lord Shiva different from Krishna is a serious spiritual deviation. The personality of Godhead tolerates offenses against himself, but not against Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is described as a recipient of Lord Vishnu's mercy, but this does not mean that the two lords are different from one another in the same way that Lord Vishnu differs from the Jivas. The Padma Purana includes the Namaparada Bhajana Stotra, a list of 10 offenses against chanting Lord Vishnu's name. Therein it is said, one who sees difference between any of Lord Shiva's qualities and names and those of Sri Vishnu is an antagonist to Hari Nam. Padma Purana Brahmananda 25:15. Lord Vishnu cannot tolerate offenses against Lord Shiva because Lord Shiva is the greatest of Lord Vishnu's empowered incarnations. Lord Shiva is especially empowered to distribute in the material world the elevated tastes of pure devotional service. But at the same time is you're understanding the difference, because what will Shiva's names be? Means, will they be primary names or secondary? They'll be secondary, right? And Vishnu's names will be secondary. So when you mention him in connection with his devotees, that's primary.
Is that okay? Then name like Ashutosh would be primary.
Ashutosh just means easily pleased. No, but it doesn't say that. Right. Then you have to add that in, then it becomes. Because otherwise it's a generic quality. Right? So that doesn't mean that we chant Shiva's names, because we've been given Krishna's name. But the point is we don't, when we're discussing or hearing about Shiva, we don't make comments. We aren't offensive. We don't say these things. That's why we're always respectful to all living entities. We're respectful to the demigods. Well, especially be respectful to Brahma and Shiva, but of the two, even Shiva is more respectable like that because of his non-difference from the Lord. But this is Sada Shiva. Right? There's the demigod Shiva. So then, in there you might see some of these anomalies, right? Just like in Hiranyagarbha in the Lord, there's that's non-different from the Lord. Like Virat is not different from the Lord. But Brahma then is a empowered Jiva in that position. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Could you please explain again, to consider the word Shiva different from Krishna is a serious spiritual deviation. How we should understand this properly? Lord Shiva and Lord Krishna, how
they are not
different?
Because Sadashiva is the mood of the Lord in that the material world is destroyed. Does that make sense? Mahavishnu, what makes the Purusha avatars different than the Vaikuntha murtis? Does that terminology make sense? You have the Lord in Vaikuntha. Okay? But then you have the Purusha avatars.
Same Lord. Same personality, different intonation.
Yes, but is there a difference in mood?
There is not different intonation.
But what is the difference in the mood? Is Vaikuntha created or destroyed? No. Therefore, it's just being maintained. Therefore, he's just God. So in Vaikuntha, Vishnu thinks I am God. Right? Here are the devotees, they're interacting like this. But the Purusha avatars, they are the creator, the maintainer, and the destroyer. So the destruction element, that's Shiva. Does that make sense? So they're non-different. But there's a difference between creator, maintainer, and destroyer. But at the same time, as they are all aspects of the same one person. So therefore, Sada Shiva and Mahavishnu are the same person. It's just two different moods. That's why Advaitacharya can be defined as Mahavishnu or defined as Sada Shiva. It just depends upon the mood. Because Karana Dakshay Vishnu has all three of these moods. Does that make sense? Yeah. And because you're dealing with he deals with the material energy, but he does that through how? Through his glance. That glance is Sada Shiva. So in this way they're non-different. Does that make sense? Okay. So this doesn't mean now you go out and buy yourself a Shiva deity and start chanting Shiva Kirtan. Okay. Yes? No?
Yeah, not worshiping the portion of the aspect.
Okay. So you're saying that meaning you're not worshiping the Purusha avatars, so you're definitely not going to be worshiping a Shiva deity. Is that what you're saying?
Okay.
Yes. But from this pastime, you're not going to go to Navadvipa and pick yourself up a Shiva deity. Yes? No? No. Okay. Yes.
Normally we recite this offense as considered land Lord Shiva to be equal to or independent of the land of Lord Vishnu.
Because it says demigods. But we're not talking about the demigod Shiva here, we're talking about Sada Shiva. Yeah, because technically he is. You know, but same time as this is a transformation, so that's where it's like milk and yogurt. So they're non-different. You know? So the non-difference is they're both dairy products. Right? But there's a difference because one's milk, one's yogurt. So in other words, this making too much of a distinction should not be done. But at the same time, as you know, you can tell Lord Vishnu is wearing a Vaijayanti garland and Lord Shiva is wearing one with bones and daturas and all whatever it is, that kind of jazz. Sorry? One is naked, yes. Yeah, so...
yeah. That's short self-tell science.
Yes.
Shiva also bewilders, isn't it? So is that demigod Shiva? Like Shankaracharya?
I mean, the potency comes from the original. Mm. So that's why you can say it's him doing all these things. So when you speak about these different levels, you speak as this one thing, but there may be a difference. Just like we speak about the residents of Dwarka as the eternal associates of the Lord, the same time as on another level, they're the demigods that come down to serve the Lord. Right? So they have these various things going on at once.
Right? Seems to be a theme. Many things going
yes,
on at once.
Yes. Yes. '87 and '88. When Maya, the master of Tripura, grew intoxicated with pride by Lord Shiva's benediction and placed Lord Shiva in danger, and when Lord Shiva was troubled by other demons, like Vrikasura, The Supreme Lord saved him and encouraged him with nectarian words, and sometimes to broadcast Lord Shiva's glories. Lord Krishna takes the role of a subordinate and worships him with intimate devotion. Lord Shiva once empowered Maya Dhanava to construct for the demons of Tripura a well of heavenly nectar that could revive the dead. On another occasion, Lord Shiva granted Vrikasura the power to crack anyone's head into pieces by merely touching it with his hand. Lord Shiva also granted great strength and influence to demons like Ravana. Each of these demons became intoxicated with his acquired perfections and created trouble for Lord Shiva. Maya made it difficult to destroy Tripura. Vrika tried to test his power on Lord Shiva's head, compelling Lord Shiva to flee for his life, and Ravana moved Kailash Mountain from its base. Each time Lord Krishna came to save Lord Shiva, he drank up Maya Dhanava's well, beguiled Vrika into touching his own head, and as Sri Ramachandra killed Ravana with bows and arrows. These famous episodes, briefly alluded to here, are elaborately described in various scriptures, including Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Brahma points out that although Lord Nrisimhadev had rebuked him, the Supreme Lord did not treat Lord Shiva's offense the same way. Instead, responding to Lord Shiva's remorse, the Lord gently tried to encourage him, saying, for example, about Vrikasura, "Just see, O Mahadeva, my Lord, how this wicked man has been killed by his own sinful reactions. Indeed, what living being can hope for good fortune if he offends exalted saints? What to speak of offending the Lord and spiritual master of the universe?" Srimad Bhagavatam 10:88-38-39. So then here is his mood is such that even if he does something that we see Brahma does, he'll get rebuked for. Lord Shiva doesn't. Like that. It's not that he's getting away with it, that if there's something wrong, he really sees. Okay. So we'll stop here.